Dr. Court Loaf, who's the medical director, Division of Environmental Health with the Chicago Department of Public Health. Did I get that right?
You did.
Okay.
Yes.
And Ruth Kersey, who's the executive director of the Midwest Pesticide Action Center, or MPAC, which used to be formerly Safer Pest Control Project. And I've always been a big fan of Safer Pest Control Project. And I'm a big fan of the fact that you guys changed the name.
Oh, good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you had to. There was just...
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's just too hard to say Safer Pest Control Project.
Well, and also you were competing with the company, that one company that does the safe, you know, Safer brand.
Exactly.
And I'm sure it was a nightmare.
Yep. People mistook us all the time.
Yeah. And they figured you probably were on this. Well, yeah, even though you might in some loose way be on the same team, you were really weren't on the same team. So I'm glad to have you both in the studio. And we're going to start with Carol, actually, Carol Brewer. She's someone who I got a couple of emails about this, but Carol was really the one who put it all into focus, because you sent me an email, Carol, about something going on in your neighborhood. And what was that?
I did. Well, I was listening to the news, sitting at work listening to the news, and there was an announcement about spraying in the Albany Park neighborhood for mosquitoes. Northwest side, plus including Albany Park, and I'm right near there. I'm actually in, right by River Park up there, and I just didn't like that idea about spraying. And even though we're right by the park, I haven't really seen any mosquitoes, so I didn't feel like that was necessary. So I called Midwest Pesticide Action Center, and Nishat Yunus, the communications associate, answered, and she was really helpful. And I asked her what their stand was on it. And she said that, that they didn't feel that it was necessary to do the spraying, in the way that the city does. And she explained what a better alternative was. And I said, well, as someone that lives in Chicago, what can I do, if I don't want my neighborhood sprayed? And she said to contact the city, write your alderman. So that's what I did. So I sat down and wrote an email to Pat O'Connor. It turns out that my ward, Ward 40, wasn't going to get sprayed that night, but I'm sure it's on the list soon. It was the ward next to me, so I'm not sure. Although I have seen trucks in my neighborhood in the past, and we always, would see them go down the street, and
You would run behind them as the fog came out and cheer.
I've seen pictures of that, and that's pretty disturbing. But
that's the 1950s.
Yeah, but so we thought, well, what do we do? Just close our windows and then come out later, and everything will be okay. And I'm someone who has developed asthma in the last couple years, and so I don't want any other things to aggravate it. So I felt like this was not a good option.
And that's how this came to be. And so I think we should go to the city first. Let's talk to Dr. Court Loaf. And again, the medical director with the Division of Environmental Health for the Chicago Department of Public Health. And this is basically what you deal with, right?
Yes, we do. So the city health department has a comprehensive program in place to address West Nile virus. Mm-hmm. Early on in the year, in May, we actually drop larvicide in our catch basins. We drop larvicide in about 100,000 catch basins, and the larvicide is useful for killing the immature form of the mosquito, so it doesn't turn into an adult. So that's one very effective way of trying to reduce the mosquito population, specifically the mosquitoes that actually can vector or carry the West Nile virus.
Do you use BT in the larvicide?
We do, yes.
Yeah. All right. And a lot of you might know about these larvicides anyway. You might not recognize the word larvicide, but you might recognize the name mosquito dunks. And these are the sort of products that you can buy. Summit puts them out. Other companies put them out. And you throw them in the water, and they release Bacillus thuringiensis, and they kill the larvae of the mosquito population. Now, all mosquitoes, including the Culex mosquito, which carries the West Nile virus?
I I believe so, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, we're dealing in, I mean, the reason you're concerned about it mainly is not that people are going to be bitten by mosquitoes, but they are going to be bitten by this particular mosquito, the Culex, which carries the West Nile virus.
That's right, yes.
So you start with larvicides. How do you determine that the larvicides have not been effective enough so that you need to spray in a community?
Right. So again, as part of our comprehensive program, we have a surveillance system in place where we set traps throughout the city. We have about 80 traps set up throughout the city between June and the end of September. We go out there twice a week and we collect these mosquitoes and we test them in our lab and we determine whether or not these mosquitoes are carrying West Nile virus or not. And if they are, we determine sort of the numbers, or we try to estimate the numbers of the mosquitoes that are carrying the West Nile virus in any particular trap. And if we see relatively high numbers of mosquitoes that are carrying West Nile virus, that's an indication that the risk of human infection or human disease is going to be is heightened in that given area. And that's one of the pieces of information or pieces of data that we use to determine whether or not spraying might be indicated.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What sort of recourse do people have? Say, Carol Brewer comes to you and says, I have asthma. My children have asthma. We're concerned about spraying in our neighborhood. What should they do?
Well, again, prior to the spraying, it's important for people to understand that we do educate the public. We do inform the public about that the spray is going to happen. We put out a press release, work with the media. We put things on Facebook, Twitter. And as I see here, we put door hangers on in the affected communities to alert people about the spray event and things that they can do to ensure that they're not exposed directly to the spray. And this particular spray contains a chemical that is safe for humans. There is certainly some toxicity because it is intended to kill mosquitoes.
And you're talking about Zenovex.
Zenovex, that's correct.
Okay. And to your credit, it's on the website, City of Chicago website. You do name the chemical.
Yes.
One of the things that I became aware of this, people, when I saw news stories about it, and I got to tell you, they just infuriated me because people are news readers in this town and probably all over the country just said, oh, there's going to be spraying. Okay, on to the next story. No mention of what the chemical might be, no mention of what people might do as a recourse. And I found it rather annoying, you know, that in this day and age, we don't have better information about how to protect ourselves. That news story might have been from the 1950s. Don't worry, kids, get behind the DDT truck. It'll be just fine. But things have changed since then. And so you use Zenovex. And why is it, do you know why the chemical Zenovex is used, by the way? It's spelled Z-E-N-I-V-E-X.
Yeah, so certainly these pesticides that are in use today are much safer than those that have been used in the 1950s. And this particular chemical, Zenovex, has a very low toxicity profile, and it's specifically targeted towards mosquitoes. And we spray at a time when the adult mosquitoes are most active, and that is right after dusk, and that's when the adult mosquitoes are out looking for a blood meal. And that's when we target our spray efforts, is to put the spray out there and to directly target the adult mosquitoes and kill the adult mosquitoes when they're out looking for their blood meal.
Mm-hmm. I found a website about Zenovex. All right, you say it has low toxicity, and the other thing is that you apply it in very low doses.
That's correct.
However, from the MSDS mm-hmm. Of Zenovex, which is the material safety data sheet, it says this pesticide is toxic to aquatic organisms, including fish and aquatic invertebrates. Runoff from treated areas or deposition into bodies of water may be hazardous to fish and other aquatic organisms. Do not apply over bodies of water, lakes, rivers, permanent streams, natural ponds, commercial fish ponds, swamps, marshes, or estuaries, except when necessary to target areas where the adult mosquitoes are present. Well, isn't that where they're going to be present? Isn't that the whole point? And it also says, and weather conditions will facilitate movement of applied material away from water in order to minimize incidental deposition into the water body. That sounds like you're your get out of jail free card to me. It says this product is highly toxic to bees exposed to direct treatment on blooming crops or weeds. Time the applications to provide the maximum possible interval between treatment and the next period of bee activity. Do not apply to blooming crops or weeds when bees are visiting the treatment area, except when applications are made to prevent or control a threat to public and or animal health determined by the state, tribal, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you know that when you spray this, this is toxic to bees, and you also know we are in a period of our history when we have a necessary concern over what we are doing to our bees, and a lot of it, whether you believe this is the smoking gun or not, scientists know that bee exposure to even low doses of pesticides are causing some damage to bees. How do you take that into consideration?
Well, again, the timing of the spray is most important. We spray at dusk, and at dusk, the adult mosquitoes are most active, but the bees are in their hives and not out. So the bees are not exposed directly to the chemical, to the pesticide. At the same time, this is a product that is very unstable in the environment. So once it begins to settle into the grass and into the flowers, it begins to degrade, and the product degrades and therefore no longer becomes toxic to anything that it's exposed to, including to the bees.
Okay. Let's bring in Ruth Kersey, who is the executive director of the Midwest Pesticide Action Center. By the way, you just heard Dr. Court Loaf, medical director for the Chicago Department of Public Health. Ruth, what is the position of the Midwest Pesticide Action Center about this kind of spraying?
Well, we as an organization, you know, really promote the reduction or elimination of the use of pesticides when you're dealing with pests. So clearly we have a bit of an alternative perspective. I mean, one of the things that you brought up is bees and the collateral damage that may happen.
What about butterflies? Do you know if butterflies are affected by this?
I don't know specifically if mm-hmm. butterflies are, but if you read even just the label on Zenovex, they also talk about, toxic for bees, toxic for other insects, toxic for aquatic life. And one thing that's not considered often when people are using these types of products or governments decide to use these products is the additive effects of them. So that's something that really concerns us. So yes, when you look at Zenovex on its own in isolation and the damage it can cause to human health or other health, it may not be very significant, or it seems like minimal risk, but when you add it to the other things that people use on their own lawns and their own homes, or add it to other underlying health conditions, it becomes a problem.
Now, are we, again, we have to be clear, are we talking about health conditions to insects or human beings? You know, I mean, it's there are both that we need, and other animals, I would assume. Now, one of the things that the city says, while it says, and this is from your website, Dr. Love, while the spray is not harmful to people or pets and is routinely sprayed in residential areas across the nation, residents of targeted neighborhoods may choose to stay indoors and close their windows while spraying is underway as an extra precaution. So are you by that admitting that people with asthmatic conditions might react to it?
No, that's not what we're saying. We're sort of responding to concerns that some people have about the use of the spray. So we give them information. We give them things that they can do should they wish to protect themselves from the spray. And again, we're not in doing that. We're not acknowledging and we're not saying that the spray is harmful to humans. It's quite the contrary. But we're giving people some things that they can do should they wish to prevent themselves from being exposed to it.
I suppose they could also knock on wood. I mean, it just seems like it's superstition. If it's not harmful and you're asking people, you're saying, well, if you want to close the windows, that's great. That is, you know, you're telling them to do something you don't believe in. So make yourself feel good. Take your placebo and you'll be all right. Carol?
Well, I have a question. Mm-hmm. Is there like a residual, like, you know, when it does fall, it's not on the grass or... you know, that you can bring it in your house or even on, like, kids' lawn toys or, I don't know, pets?
Yeah.
You know,
One of the nice things about Zenovex is that when it does fall to to the ground, the ultraviolet light will start to degrade it. So by the morning when it comes out, the ultraviolet light will start to degrade the chemical and it will no longer be effective.
It actually remains in the environment for about 2 days in water and about 4 days on the land.
All right. And if it's remaining for 2 days, 4 days on the land, 2 days in the water?
4 days on ground, right, and 2 days in the water.
Where it is still having residual effect as well.
Correct.
On insects.
It is degrading and has a short half-life. I mean, compared to other pesticides, it does have a short half-life, so I will give that to the Chicago Department of Public Health. But it is around for a number of days after it's
sprayed. Well, let's cut to the chase here, Ruth. You're not the doctor. He's the doctor. Ruth, would you prefer they not spray?
Our organization does think it's a bit of overkill to spray.
I happen to agree with you, by the way. I agree with Ruth Kersey that I think it's overkill. I think we're past that point.
Right.
Where I think, given the seriousness of West Nile, which is a serious, and people do die from it, no more than 300 people have ever died in a given year. This year, the numbers are very low. The last count I saw was three or two. I have it somewhere. It is two. In 2013 so far. 286 last year, which was the highest number ever recorded. And typical numbers of people who die from it are 43, 57, 32, 44. There have been several times over 100. We have 316 million people in this country. Even 286 deaths is 9/100,000ths of 1%. That, to me, seems like overkill to use that, especially when you consider you're already doing the larvicides, and I'm sure you agree with that kind of treatment, Ruth.
I would say the Chicago Department of Public Health has done a really excellent job of addressing concerns for West Nile virus and doing larviciding and doing the surveillance and doing what they're supposed to be doing. And they have to balance that, of course, against public perception. And I think it's very good on this show that you're talking about those numbers, because that also gives people good, better perspective on what's happening with West Nile virus.
Well, and here's the perspective that I got. Carol and I went last night to a wonderful event. It was the sixth annual Peak Harvest Farm Dinner at Angelic Organics Farm in Caledonia. I didn't get bitten once. I was out in a farm in the middle of nowhere. Okay, no mosquitoes. I had no repellent. B, we ended up talking to a man who nearly died last year from Lyme disease, who says that Lyme disease is really a serious, serious problem, and that Northern Illinois has become a hotspot for Lyme disease. And it doesn't matter whether you're in the country. I mean, you in forest preserves, he said mice carry Lyme disease, and that maybe we should be directing our efforts there and not so much toward West Nile virus. I think West Nile virus has become the rock star of diseases, and perhaps in an unwarranted fashion, because it's new. We got in, the late 90s is when it showed up in the United States, and people went, oh my gosh, West Nile. Well, in all that time, there's certainly no indication that it is becoming a pandemic. Not even close. And so when we go back to these treatments of the fogging, which seems to me, and it does, we've mentioned the 50s several times on the show. It feels like we've gone back to those times. It's like, let's get the fog trucks out and when we're more sophisticated, and anybody who studies control of these insects know that's the measure of last resort. That is the least effective measure is fogging. Most effective is get them in the larvicide stage. When you can apply that. So I'm just Dr. Loaf. I'm wondering, have you heard about the prevalence of Lyme disease?
Yeah, of course. Lyme disease is a bacterium disease that's carried by ticks, as you mentioned. It is growing in importance throughout the United States, and including around areas of Illinois. So it is a very serious disease, and it can be a very serious disease for folks. Now, getting back to West Nile virus, I think one thing I do want to state is that We recognize the concerns about the spray, and we do recognize that people are concerned about the spray. We do give people information about the type of spray that's used and ways that they can prevent their exposure to it. And I do want to reiterate a couple things. First of all, we use spray as a last resort. We've only sprayed on two separate days this whole summer. Last year, we had a fairly significant West Nile season as well, which we had to spray on several occasions as well. And there are some summers where we do not spray at all because we don't feel that the risk of human infection is that great. So we do spray it at a last resort, and we're guided by our surveillance data. We're guided by the information we collect from our mosquito traps, so as we can target our spray efforts in only those areas where we really feel that we really need to spray as a last resort. And the most important thing about this is that this is a disease that can kill people, and it can kill elderly people. And in absent spray, West Nile virus infection will remain elevated. And it potentially can kill people. So we do feel that we have an obligation to protect our folks in the city, to prevent themselves from coming down with this infection, and to prevent them from dying from this disease. Now, in addition to death, people can develop meningitis. They can develop encephalitis. And they can have very severe consequences of these infections as well. And again, this is a disease that primarily affects the elderly. And so again, the city feels we have an obligation to protect those folks, and as a last resort, we feel the need to spray, but we only spray on a very limited basis when we feel that the risk is elevated.
And to be sure, you're not the only county doing that. I got a post from somebody who said DuPage sprayed twice in July, and I'm sure the other counties in the area have.
And I'll just add, too, that we get a lot of requests for spraying throughout the city. For spraying.
Now, do you also get requests? What would you say the ratio of requests to for spraying versus those who say, please don't spray around my home? Or are you not able to quantify that?
It's hard to quantify.
And can you clarify who to contact? Because when I did contact my alderman, there was no response, unfortunately. But I emailed. No email back, and that was a week ago.
Because from what I understand, you can request it. It doesn't mean that the truck is not going to spray. Ruth, you're shaking your head.
Well, it wouldn't be if a single house requesting no
spray. I know,
spray
it seems absurd. It wouldn't happen.
Yeah. I mean, our perspective is exactly like, you know, they do use the spraying as a last resort. My problem is that there is a lot of whitewashing of what this product is and pesticides are in general. And the term safe being used in the same sentence with a pesticide is really not responsible. And that concerns me because although we are trying to protect populations from West Nile virus, we want to make sure we're also protecting the public from problems, chronic diseases that could come up later. There's very little data on any of that, like what long-term exposure to these types of pesticides
are. Well, Zenovix is a newer chemical,
right,
isn't it?
So we really don't know that much
about
it.
Well, and I'll use this as an example of this because I talk about this on the show, and you know about this, Ruth. 2,4-D, according to the EPA, the doses in which you use it on your lawn are insignificant. It's less than 1%. However, we do know it has been linked to endocrine disruption, to it's a known carcinogen, other problems with it. I tell people when you use 2,4-D, you're putting poison on your lawn. And Ruth has pointed out in the same way, we have these arsenals and we come up with more and more chemicals, and when is the point at which we say, you know, maybe that strategy is not working anymore, and then we go to other strategies and become more aggressive in the earlier stages of their development, mosquitoes' development, with larvicides and other treatments. And, of course, public information is key. You can't have standing water in your backyard, especially standing water that's been there for a long time. And I know that it happens in old tires and places where people don't know it's happening, and that's tough to get the word out. But that education obviously is part of it, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very important. I mean, I think the city can do only so much, and we really need to rely on the public to take those measures to reduce those areas in their backyards, in their neighborhoods where the mosquitoes like to lay their eggs. And as you said, these are small standing pools of water. The adult mosquito will lay their eggs in these small standing pools of water. And those sources are significant, and it really doesn't take a lot of water for these mosquitoes to lay their eggs, and that is a huge problem, and it's hard to address.
So we only have a couple minutes here. Ruth, I would direct this to you. Where would you like to see this kind of operation go?
Well, we would really like to see just general spraying go away completely. It's not very effective. It could be potentially dangerous to people. It could be dangerous to wildlife and animals. But what I would like to really see, I know the Chicago Department of Public Health has a responsibility to protect the public, and they take that very seriously. What I would like to see as an organization and a citizen of Chicago is transparency, as much transparency as possible. Notice, a lot of notice, more education, of course, is always good. You know, just a lot more information about why they make the decision to spray, I think, is really important. And there really is very little, there's very difficult to find out that information.
Okay. And the other thing I would add is, in the case of Carol, what recourse do people have who have objections to it? Right now, there's no recourse, really. You can complain to your alderman, but you're still going to end up being in the middle of the spray area. It seems to me, even as a matter of public safety, there has to be a little dialogue. And I think what I see happening is that this is what the way we've always done it, and this is the way we're going to continue to do it because we're looking out for your safety. Okay, I understand that the city has responsibility, whether it's water or the air or insects, to look out for public safety. On the other hand, these people are citizens. And they have a right to speak up and be heard. And, you know, maybe that process needs to be, as you said, a little more transparent. I don't know. What do you think, Dr. Loaf?
Yeah, I mean, we struggle with these questions a lot, too. We do recognize the public concern about the spraying. At the same time, we also hear from a different side of the public who want to see more spraying, not only for West Nile, but also for nuisance reasons.
Really?
And we don't spray for nuisance, which is something unique to the city. We get a lot of requests.
Wait, and for nuisance what?
For nuisance, basically where we get mosquitoes that nuisance mosquitoes are basically mosquitoes that just bite you that don't cause disease. There are a lot of different types of mosquitoes, including mosquitoes in Chicago that just bite you that don't transmit disease. We get a lot of requests from the public to spray for that. We don't do that. That's been our policy for a number of years.
Well, good. Good for you. I hope you don't spray for Japanese beetles either, you know, and that's just another nuisance.
So so we do take these concerns very seriously. We do try to balance the risk versus the benefit as much as we can, which is why we do very limited spraying, and we target those areas where we feel that our data show an increased risk of human infection.
I want to thank you both for coming into the studio. That is Dr. Court Loaf, who's the Medical Director, Division of Environmental Health, Chicago Department of Public Health. You're welcome anytime. I hope when you have other issues that you want to get out that you come to the show. I'd appreciate it.
Thank you.
Ruth Kersey, Executive Director, Midwest Pesticide Action Center, formerly Safer Pest Control Project. Anything else you want to get out about what MPAC is up to right now before I let you go?
Well, we're working very hard with the city. We work great with the Chicago Department of Public Health on bed bug issues. So if you want information about bed bugs, which is always a problem for urban environments these days.
And I've had Rick Moskowitz on the show, and I know he works with you guys a lot about bed bugs, and there are new treatments for bed bugs, and some of them are very, very effective.
Right. And we're also going to have a new website coming out in September, so check that out. It'll be even easier to access our information. And so we just keep chugging right along, so come check us out.
That's right. Even though they're no longer Safer Pest Control, you may now recognize them as the Midwest Pesticide Action Center. It's going to take a little time for people to get used to that, roll it around in their brains, but I think it's good for you guys to do that.
Thank you.
All right, and thank you both for being in the studio. I appreciate it.
Thank you.